So as a leadership team at Network, we talk about what we would be looking at in our teaching series. And we try and do that by thinking of what we do on a Sundays as a buffet meal with a spread of different ingredients, different things that we can feast on, really, out of God's Word. And we tend to do that by thinking about what we've looked at recently, whether we've been in the New Testament or the Old Testament, what sort of things we've been focusing on, whether it's the detail of our lives, whether it's about discipleship, whether it's about mission, you know, all those things. We try and think, okay, where would it be helpful for us to go next? And in the midst of that, we try and listen to God and say, where would you like us to be? What is it that we should be bringing on a Sunday morning? And encouraging all of us to participate in, because many of you come and speak, which is fantastic. So let me give you a little insight as to how that's happened to get to Genesis. We've been in the New Testament. We looked at the three chapters in Matthew, didn't we? The Sermon on the Mount. We did a little bit in the Old Testament looking at Daniel, the first four chapters of Daniel, and how we were living in a foreign land and needed to be thinking about how that, what that then means for us as we share our faith with others, as we live following Jesus. And then we've had several Sundays over the last few months, probably, where different people have just come and shared and spoken to us, which has been great. Because you then bring what you have on your heart, don't you? That you then share something that's vibrant for you, and different things have come our way over the last few weeks. So we were then thinking, okay, where do we go next? And I remembered in our sermon series around the Sermon on the Mount, Mark Edison did something around the law and grace. The law and grace. And he said, often we're stuck in the sort of grace bit. We don't look at the law bit enough, was partly what he was saying. We've got caught up as evangelical charismatics and all this grace stuff. How about we look at the law? And his suggestion to me was that we did that by looking at the Old Testament, and we did a series on Leviticus. And I thought, I'd love to be in the Old Testament, but I'm not convinced that a series on Leviticus would be really good for us at this particular moment in time. So I then started racking my brain and thinking about what we could do. And we talked about it as a leadership team, and we had several ideas. And where we landed was in Genesis. And the reason for that, or one of the reasons for that, as far as I'm concerned, is that I think we're living in a time where we've lost our sense of identity. The football's been really good for us over these last few weeks. And I don't know whether you've felt the energy levels just sort of rise in people around you. The sense of well-being has just gone up a few notches because we've refound a sense of who we are, because we've got a football team that's won a few matches. Do you know what I mean? And we've come out of this slump of Brexit and feeling, oh, we don't know who we are and what's going on. I think feeling a bit lost, to be honest, to actually have something that we can galvanise around, something that sort of has pepped us up a bit. And I've been listening to other commentators who are talking about where we are in our culture, what's going on, and I just thought it would be good for us to have an anchor, something that gives us a sense of who we are as the people of God. And I think Genesis does that. Genesis does more than that. It gives us an understanding as to who we are as humanity, as a whole, not just as people of faith, but who we were created to be. And in thinking about that, I was reminded of something that I heard several years ago, which was this idea that in Genesis particularly, but all through Scripture, and probably up until relatively recently, we lived under what somebody called a sacred canopy. We lived under the Ark of the Heavens, this sacred canopy idea of everything being connected to God, God being connected to us, God being connected to the world being connected to God. And I thought it would be good to experience that sort of sacred canopy idea this morning, and to make one that goes over the top of us so that we can see what it was like for our forefathers to live in a world that was under a canopy. So let's see if we can get this over the top of us. I'll need a few people to help. Come and grab a corner. Thanks, Matthew. Tall people are always good for this sort of thing. So we live under this canopy, this ark of the heaven. So this is what it was like to live in Genesis. Live in the time of Genesis, the Old Testament, the New Testament, you were under this canopy. And this canopy was God's presence. This canopy was God enveloping all of life, joining life together. So to use a phrase made popular by Rob Bell recently, everything is spiritual. And everything was spiritual. There wasn't anything that wasn't spiritual. One of the things I love about going to Africa is that you step back under this canopy. This canopy is still there in Tanzania. So when I head there on Friday, when I arrive on Saturday morning, I'll step under this canopy. How do I know I do that? Well, by the way that I experience God in that culture. It's very different being under this canopy in Tanzania. I always have very dramatic, very powerful experiences of God in Tanzania because this canopy is still there. This is still in place. What's happened in our culture, in the UK, in Europe, most of Europe, in the West, generally, is that this canopy's gone. So let's pull it away. It's just disappeared. It's no longer there anymore. And we sit under nothing. Nothing is connected together. Very little makes sense apart from the sense that you make of it yourself. There's no what some people describe as meta-narrative. There's no bigger overarching why to our lives. And what we've done with Genesis, typically, in this recent modern era as it's described, is we've tried to use it to answer the wrong question. And I think we've got ourselves into trouble. We've used Genesis to try and answer the how question, which is what science is doing. Science is helping us answer the how question. How old is the earth? How did the dinosaurs die out? You know, how did this happen? How did that happen? Genesis is not written, I don't think, to answer that how question. It's written to answer the why question. And that, I think, is the question that people are asking. Why am I here? Why doesn't life make sense anymore? Why do I feel in the way that I do? Why do I react to this person in the way that I do? All those why questions are out there. And we are the people who can answer those questions, particularly from this book, Genesis. And I've been amazed, since we decided we'd look at this book, I've come across a guy called Jordan Peterson. I don't know whether any of you have come across him. He's out there on the web. He came to the forefront, particularly standing up for just basic biology, as he would describe it, saying that there are differences between men and women. You know, we're not the same. In a nutshell, that he stuck his head above the parapet. He's a lecturer in psychology in Toronto University, and he's just gone viral on the internet. So if you just type his name in, you can see some of the stuff he's doing. And then this book's just come out. So I thought I'd get myself a copy. And I was amazed as I started reading it. You can see I've only just started reading it, where my bookmark is. But I start reading the first few chapters, and he's taking for the basis of a lot of his arguments, guess what? Genesis. It's called 12 Rules for Life, an Antidote to Chaos. 12 Rules for Life, an Antidote to Chaos by Jordan Peterson. He's a smart cookie. He's quite outspoken. He's quite sort of argumentative, but in a forthright way, but not in a way that you sort of get angry with. Do you know what I mean? He's just quite strong, well thought through, well researched, and a very good communicator. So I thought, isn't that fascinating? Here are we thinking about doing a series in Genesis. I pick this book up, the guy who's becoming really popular, particularly drawing young men to his websites, to his blogs, to his YouTube clips, and probably reading this book, many of whom have lost a sense of who they are. We were talking yesterday at our street party and got into a conversation with one person in the close who was just saying how sad it is, you know, that the number of young people particularly, but young men who are committing suicide. The highest killer of young men is suicide, under 40. I mean, that's awful, isn't it? But it's because many of them have lost their sense of who they are and are unable to answer that why question. And life just caves in on them. So, Jordan, if you want a bit of summer reading, then I can't vouch for the rest of the book, but the amount that I've read so far is just, it's just very interesting, him drawing from biblical reference points, telling some of his own life story, and then drawing from his psychology experience, and asking the question, really, what part does religion have to play?
Is he a believer?
Good question. There's an article on him in the Christianity magazine, this month's edition, and they were hinting that he probably was, but I don't think he's definitively come out and said yes. Yeah, he'll get jumped on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unhelpful for him, absolutely. Yeah. So I think he's probably being very wise and quite sensible in not saying that. The article in the Christianity magazine was quite helpful, just and sort of saying, well, isn't it fascinating that this guy has risen to, you know, notoriety, really, and what's drawing people to him? And isn't it fascinating that he's using the Bible, talking about Jesus, particularly talking about Genesis? Some of his insights into Genesis, I think, are really, really good from a psychological point of view, but also many other aspects that he draws out. So that's, for me, really, really interesting. So Genesis sits under this sacred canopy that we've sat under for most of our history, but currently we're not sitting under. And I suppose what I would encourage us to grapple with as we look at Genesis is it our responsibility to try and pull this sacred canopy back over? Is that what we want to do? Or is there another way that we should be thinking about how we answer the why question? Because the big story, the meta-narrative, as it's called, everything holding together, doesn't seem to be, there doesn't seem to be much of a connection point with that, where everything's disintegrated. So do we go with that disintegration in our connection with people, in our sharing the gospel with people? Or do we try and attempt to connect everything back and step under or recreate that sacred canopy? That's an open question for me. It might be that we do a bit of each. And I wonder how helpful it is for us to be still thinking us of ourselves, of being under that sacred canopy. Does that help us or does that hinder us, particularly in our mission, in our sharing faith with others? Do we just isolate ourselves because we sort of hide away almost under this sacred canopy? Or do we need to accept that it's gone? I found an interesting article. Well, it's a précis of the guy, Peter Berger, who came up with, Berger probably, who came up with this idea of the sacred canopy about 50 years ago. And he was recognizing that it's gone and talking about what that looks like and whether we should be, how we should respond to that and what that means for us as Christians particularly. So we're going to spend some time in the Old Testament, as I say. We're going to work through Genesis. We're not going to do a thorough 3-year series, which is what you'd probably need to do to cover the book of Genesis. So for those of you who like going through things verse by verse by verse, you'll probably get a little frustrated because it's going to be slightly broad brush strokes that we're going to work through the major themes, look at the major components and ask, well, what does this mean for us? What does it mean for the world that we live in and our relationships with other people particularly? It's interesting, isn't it, that currently, again, there is this retros really in. Fusion, you know, the student Christian organization that works with students that we support, have just produced a fabulous book on small groups and setting up small groups on your university campus and all that sort of thing. Really well written and put together guide. But it feels like something that somebody might have printed in the 70s. It feels very, very old. And I'm thinking, is this fascinating? This doesn't feel at all trendy or current or, you know, glossy and full of colour and, you know, all the sort of things that you'd expect it would need to be to connect with young people at university. It feels as if it's something that somebody would have put in my hand when I was 12 or 13 or 14, as if it's sort of home done almost. And that sense of needing to go back, of needing to be somewhere in the past, I think is quite strong in our culture. So again, drawing people back to some of those roots, which again is what Jordan Peterson is doing, and reminding us of some of that heritage spiritually, I think will be helpful for us. The other thing that comes up, of course, in the early chapters of Genesis is this whole idea of shame. You know, Adam and Eve realize that they're naked. They run and hide from God. And that, as I've mentioned before on a Sunday morning, is something that, again, that is very alive and well in our culture, and something that I think the Genesis story has something to say to us about, and the roots of that, and what, again, we can do to deal with that or help people step away from it, find health and wholeness as they reconnect with God and what that might look like. Also, in the second part of Genesis, we see the nation of Israel being established, don't we, through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, this sort of family, this nation starting from families and relationships. And what's fascinating is we've looked at those together, particularly as Sue and I met to look at how we work with that second section. They're all pretty dysfunctional. I mean, it is a mess. It really, really is. And, you know, you look around often, I think, in our century. I'm sure every century does it. Every sort of generation does it and says, oh, what on earth's going on? You know, can never have been like this before. But you read those stories in the second, you know, part of Genesis and you think, my goodness. And I think what that shows us, and hopefully what we'll discover as we look at those, is that we believe in a God who accommodates us. There's an interesting thought. And there is this stream of thinking in Christian theology called accommodation. You know, that God works with us, that he responds and reacts to the things that we do, as any good father would. And we see that particularly through Genesis. I was listening to somebody the other day from the Bible Society doing the Bible course, which we're using in our Friday group and also on a Wednesday evening. Fabulous little course. And the guy who leads that, when he talks about Genesis, says that God presses the refresh button a number of times. And I thought, that was a lovely little picture. Here we go, we're just going to refresh. You know, this has all got really to... And God just goes, jump, and refreshes. We see it around, you know, the story of Noah, Tower of Babel, just lots of different times that we see that God just says, okay, guys, I'll give you another chance. Let's see if we can do this another way. Again, just as a dad would do with a youngster, you know, trying to encourage them to step in the right direction. So we'll see that, hopefully, as we go through Genesis. And that's something that, again, I think will help us to describe the God that we believe in. This is not a God who's distant, who's dictatorial, who says, do this or I'll smite you off the face of the earth, but actually is a God who says, I want the best for you. I want to press this refresh button. A God who says, he'll do that with us, but ask us to do that with each other as well. It was interesting, Mark, that you asked what was our favourite verse or verses in Genesis. And mine is in Genesis 6, just the beginning of the story of Noah. Genesis 6, verse 6. The Lord was grieved that he'd made mankind on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. And you might think, why on earth is that your favourite verse in Genesis? Of all the verses you could choose, that's pretty, ugh. The Lord was grieved that he'd made mankind on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. And I think for me, we get a little window into the God that we believe in there. This God who is a God of love, whose heart that should be full of love is filled with pain. Which shows you how much God is connected to his creation. How much he's just distraught and overwhelmed and pained by the wickedness on the face of the earth. Just really gives, I think, a very powerful picture to me of this God who's not distant and remote, but is engaged and engaging, this moving mover, as we thought about a couple of weeks ago. So there are a few little headlines. The main thing, I think, just going back to the beginning, a very good place to start, is the fact that this gives us our beginning. It gives us a sense of who we are, not just us, but the whole world in which we live. So we tend to be quite people-focused, don't we? But this gives us an opportunity as well to look at all the green issues, I guess, because we've been given this place, haven't we, by God, to look after, to stewardship, to look after. What does that mean for us? So we'll spend some time looking at that. So next week, we're going to have some readings just to highlight some of the key things. And then we'll be heading off for the summer, having a break over August. And then we'll pick this up again in September. So this is just, a why. Why are we doing Genesis? And I think it's for those sorts of reasons, really. So to try and answer the why question rather than the how question, to put it back in that space, to think about how we then deal with some of the issues that it raises. I mean, the whole same-sex relationships, all that sort of stuff will spill out as we have these conversations. The evolution versus creationism in its classic forms, we're going to have a conversation about that one Sunday. So there'll be lots of things that will come out of it that I think will be very relevant to us. The whole shame idea that we see depicted particularly in Genesis 3, what does that mean for us? How do we grapple with that? How do we communicate the gospel with a shame dynamic, where that's relevant into our culture today? So a few little headlines, really. And so the outline we have, which Sue has been working away on really, really well, runs this for a sort of 10-week series. So we'll run through to just before Christmas, run up to Christmas, and then we'll pick it up again, and it'll probably run January into the first bit of February. So we've got some time to grapple with it, to ask questions around it, to enjoy stepping back into some of these stories and looking at them together. So if you want to listen to it online over the summer, then BibleGateway.com has their audible version, which you can listen to dramatically, read by different voices, a little bit of which we'll have next week as we read it together, which would be good. It's Bible Gateway. BibleGateway.com is a good place to go. They have a free, hundreds of versions of the Bible up there. You can look at it in lots of different versions, but they also have an audible version that you can listen to. And as I say, my favourite one is the dramatised version rather than the single voice, because that sort of brings it to life a bit more and you hear the different voices. So do that over the summer. Enjoy reading it and reading round it. So if there's other things that you want to explore off the back of it, so that we come back in September just ready to enjoy exploring.